Thank you for joining me on the Type 1 Divabetic Podcast. I'm your host, Audra Shoup Smith, and this is my story. Guys, I'm alive! I didn't go anywhere. So I should have had a lot of audio banked before Brian came home after being gone for months, so that I could have just still cranked out episodes in the few weeks that he's been back, because we've been seriously so busy. And I didn't do that, so I'm sorry. But that's where I've been. It's like he came back and life started happening again, and it's been awesome, but wow, I'm just exhausted. And I haven't had time to really do anything, let alone record a bunch of audio for my show. So I'm sorry, but it makes me feel good to know that y'all care. I've had a lot of y'all reach out to me and be like, where are you? Where you been, girl? And I'm like, I'm sorry. I will come back soon. And here I am. I guess I was just trying to get to the day that Brian was coming home, and I wasn't really thinking about, maybe I should have some audio backlogged so I can crank out episodes and not have to record while he's home, and I can just spend time with him. But it got to a certain point, especially in the last 10 days, where I was just trying to keep my head above water, just trying to make it through every day without killing somebody, and just trying to keep whatever little minuscule sanity I had left. And it was pretty much all gone by that point. Well, let me tell you what happened in the 10 days before he came home. And I want to start this off by saying we live in a nice house. I love our little house. We live in an eclectic area. I love our little neighborhood. So everything I'm about to say, this kind of stuff is not the norm. It just all seemed to happen all at once 10 days before he came home. We had a leak in the roof and a lot of bad storms, so that was getting worse. There was an electrical issue with one of the light switches in the kitchen to the point where the light, switches in the area where the light switches are was warm and there was buzzing behind the wall. And I was like, definitely not equipped to handle an electrical fire. let's see, leaky roof, light switch issue. Oh, I discovered termites in one of our walls, one of our outdoor facing walls. That was really exciting. I had like a literal breakdown because I was like, I feel so violated. Like, how long have they been here with me in this house? Just like existing together. I was such a mess for some reason about that. It felt like a violation. I'm like, I want y'all out of here. I became like a mafia guy. And I was like, I want them dead. I want all of their children and their parents and all of them just dead and wiped away. It was not my best persona. But hey, most of these issues are fixed now. Oh, after the termite thing started being taken care of, I come home from work literally the Monday of the week that he was coming home. And I'm pulling onto my street, and I see a little bit of commotion, and I'm like, this is weird. What's going on? Pull onto my street. There's like five or six sheriff SUVs. Some of them are parked like in my driveway and in front of my house and parked on the street across from me. And I was just like, what in the world is going on? But I was like, I'm just going to stay calm, take the dog out, do what I usually do, like, who knows? It could have been like a break-in, and I'll go talk to the officers and see what's going on in just a minute. So I take the dog out. The neighborhood kids come down the street. They're like, hey, Mrs. Audra. Hey, Hamilton. How are y'all? I'm playing. And I'm like, guys, do you have any idea what's going on? These kids are like late elementary. Some are in middle school. And they're like, oh, yeah, see that car right there? And that car that they're talking about said homicide unit. And I was like, yeah. And they're like, yeah, the homicide unit's here because there was a homicide. Where's Hamilton's ball? Can we play with him? And I'm like, I need to go inside for a minute and I'll come see y'all in just a little while. I get in the house. I call my sister-in-law. I'm like, what do I do? There was allegedly, like, a homicide across the street. The homicide unit's here. Like, half of the police department pretty much is here. Like, but no one's acting frantic. I can't tell what's going on. Do I have the right to walk over there and ask? But, like, I don't want to be trespassing. Anyways, I ended up walking over there and asking the woman who lives in the house. I guess I was in shock because the best way that I could think to phrase this question was, "Hey, do you know what happened?" And later I'm like, "Audra, she lives in the house. She knows what happened. Like, you are such an idiot." Whatever. That's the best I could come up with. Anyways, her 16-year-old son accidentally shot his friend. He found a gun and was trying to look all cool and show it off. And he, you know, didn't have any education when it comes to handling a gun. And the gun went off when he was trying to show the features of it and shot the friend in the shoulder. She's fine. He had to go to juvie and whatever, and it's all fine now. They completed a full investigation. But still, I'm like, this would only happen right before Brian comes home. It was just, there were a few holes in the story, too, at the time that were making me be really nervous. And I just ended up going and staying at my friend Lindsay's house. She's like, "You need to just get over here and stay with us." And I'm like, "Yeah, I don't really want to be alone." I'm pretty sure that's it. Oh, and then the next day there were, like, tornadoes coming through. So then I was scared about our house and about the leaky roof and that being, like, exacerbated. And, oh my gosh, I was just like, by the end of that time, I was like, I am ready for him to come home. And now that he's been home, pretty much no bad things have been happening because, you know, that's how it goes. And honestly, my blood sugar levels have been, like, I'll look at my Dexcom and I have, like, straight lines for most of the day now because I really think it's from not being as stressed. Like, when he was gone, I was constantly stressed out because everything fell on my shoulders. But now that he's back, I feel like my body and my mind and my heart can just kind of take a break and be and relax. And it's so funny to see how, like, significantly stress can impact my levels. Honestly, stress impacts me more than, like, eating something really high carb. Having extreme stress sends me into crazy levels, when eating something high carb will probably spike me, but then I can get it under control. But stress will just send me totally crazy. So my dead pancreas is glad that he's home. My friends are glad he's home because I have some sanity left in me. Yeah, it's been really nice, but I've been really busy and I'm sorry that I've neglected y'all. I have to warn you, I am on, like, my third cup of coffee this morning. Not really sure why, but I woke up with a headache and it will not go away. And so, of course, my direct answer for everything is coffee, 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 because, you know, coffee fixes everything. So I know I need to just switch to water, but coffee makes me happy and it's my love language, and sue me. But it makes me a little more talkative and a little more feisty. So y'all should probably buckle up because you don't really want to be dealing with a pissed off redhead. And that's kind of what we have here today. In the time that I've taken my little sabbatical from my podcast for a month, Starbucks released the Unicorn Frap. I did not try it. I heard mixed reviews. It was gorgeous. I love pretty things. It was totally Instagram worthy. And yeah, I don't really have an opinion on the drink itself because, like I said, I didn't try it. Our Tuscaloosa Starbucks sold out of it, like, by midday, the first day it came out. So apparently it's at least intriguing enough for people to want to try it. And I would say that that was a good marketing move there, Starbucks. Good job. So yeah, I don't really know much about the drink. I know that there was a lot of things being shared on Facebook about, "Oh my gosh, why would you drink this? It's pure sugar. It's like 65 grams of carbs and sugar, and it's like 700 calories or whatever. It's crazy," which, honestly, y'all, all the fraps are like that. If you actually look, they all are similar in that way. And so Nothing too different, but I guess since it's a novelty drink, that kind of sparked the conversation. But there were lots of memes during that time that was like, diabetes in a cup. And I knew the second that I heard the unicorn frap was going to be released, I was like preparing myself for the insensitive diabetes jokes. And, you know, I wish I could say that, I like have a sense of humor and I can just laugh about it. Cause I do. I have a sense of humor about most things. I love to laugh and I don't like to be overly sensitive. I don't like to be easily offended because I think that a lot of people these days are really easily offended and, you know, we can't always be speaking perfectly to make everybody happy and behaving perfectly to make everyone happy because, you know, all of that is subjective. We can't be constantly walking on eggshells with each other all the time. But I just really think that it's so classless and rude to make a mockery of someone's serious disease. And that's where I have to draw the line. And that's where I have to say, like, I have to take a stand. And I was talking to my mom about it because I made a really long rant on Facebook where I said something about, y'all, what you're doing is not humor. It's slander and it's hurtful and it needs to stop. And here's why. Here's some context. And I'm Facebook friends with a lot of my mom's friends, and they all saw it and shared it and whatever, and they all asked my mom about it. Like, did somebody say something to her about it? Or, like, what happened to spark that? Because I don't really like to get like that on Facebook. I try to keep Facebook fun and just kind of, like, sharing pictures of my life. But, you know, sometimes I do have to get real, and I don't have a problem doing that at all. And so, anyways, my mom was asking me, like, what happened? Because, I mean, what I told them was, I think it's just she feels very strongly about being vocal about this because it's a really big issue. People aren't really that vocal about it. And during her first few months of diagnosis, something really embarrassing happened to her involving people being rude about diabetes. And I feel like ever since then, she's been taking a stand against it. And I was like, oh my gosh, you're totally right. Like, I didn't really realize that was the catalyst, but now that she said that and I'm thinking about it, I think it's totally true. So, picture this. I'm within the first few months of my diagnosis. My whole life has turned upside down for reasons completely outside of my control. I have T1 only because it runs in my family, not because I did anything to deserve getting it. I've always been fit and healthy and treat my body well, and so imagine my shock being diagnosed with a disease, diabetes, that in our culture sounds like it's a self-inflicted disease. So I spent a lot of time really confused and upset, but the more I learned about my condition, I was like, oh, I only got this because it runs in my family, and it's not my fault. And, you know, even a lot of cases of type 2 diabetes aren't the result of people's choices. I know someone who runs marathons and eats so well, who always has, and they have type 2 because it runs in their family. So type 2 isn't always caused by lifestyle choices either. But the more I learned about it, the more I was like embarrassed to have a disease that has nothing to do with obesity and unhealthiness. Yet it's grouped in that realm just because of the name, just because it shares a name with a disease that is generalized in that way. And that felt like a cross to bear. And sometimes it still does. So anyways, within my first few months of diagnosis, I'm trying to get my life together, trying to feel well. I didn't feel well most of the time, but this particular Friday night, my husband and our friends were like, let's go do this wine tasting. And so I was like, okay, we went, it was really fun. We were having a good time. I felt good. And it was the first time I'd been out in a while, and I was happy to be there, and it felt really good to kind of try and be normal again. And we're sitting at this wine tasting, and I take out my, I think at this point I was on injections still, so I take out my syringe and my insulin vial, and I'm dosing my injection, and I just stick it in my stomach, and it is what it is. You know, everyone that I was with didn't even blink an eye because they knew to expect that. And there's this middle-aged lady sitting close to me, and she asked me about it, and I was like, oh yeah, I have type 1 diabetes, and so basically my pancreas just kind of floats in there and doesn't really do anything, so I have to pretty much be my pancreas, and I tried to give some context to it, and I don't know if she just is socially awkward or what, but she was asking a lot of rude questions like, oh, did you get that because your parents fed you a lot of sugar when you were a kid? Or like, oh, did you get that because, like, you were overweight and now you had to lose weight and it just still, like, stuck around? And I was getting so frustrated, but I was just, like, trying to ignore her. It got to a point that her questions were so rude that I just literally looked away and didn't talk to her. And I was mad at myself for the longest time for not being like, man, I appreciate your curiosity, and I really would love to answer your questions, but the way that you're asking them is very hurtful, and maybe can you think of a different way to ask them? Or, you know, I'm continually telling you, no, that's not how I got it. No, like, can you just listen to what I'm saying? I would love to have a conversation and educate you, but I need, you know, this is a two-way street. I need you to be receptive to what I'm saying and not just make assumptions based on your very, very, very minuscule knowledge that you have on this disease. You know, I should have stood up for myself. I could have. You know, she put the ball in my court. You know, when you start asking me such personal questions like that, I'm an open book. I'll answer them. But if you're going to be rude about it, like, I have every right to put my foot down about that. And ever since that day, I think that I've felt that it's my mission to clear up all of the myths and misconceptions surrounding the name diabetes, because type 1 is autoimmune. It functions completely differently than type 2 in the way that it comes about, in the way that it's developed, in the way that it's treated, in the long-term effects. You know, type 2, there's a chance that it can be reversible. For some people, if they just turn their life around, lose weight, work out, eat healthy, they can get off of their injections, they can get off of their pills, and they can reverse it. Type 1, no matter how well I eat, no matter how much I run, no matter what I do, I'm still going to have it forever because it's autoimmune. There's an issue with my immune system. I literally have a dead vital organ in my body. And that is a different situation and a different scenario altogether. And a lot of people don't get that. I surely did not get that before I was diagnosed. So I understand the misconception. Like, you know, when you don't really have a reason to know all this information about it and to know about the differences, then your life just kind of goes on. You know, you don't have a reason to know it, so whatever. But it really bothers me. I'm sorry. It's hurtful because look at where I'm coming from. Throughout the past 4 years of my diagnosis, I've almost died 4 times now, maybe 5. This disease has tried to kill me, and I keep going to see these specialists. Throughout our journey with infertility, I'm going to lots of specialists, and they evaluate me and they're like, you're the best, most well-controlled T1 I've ever had come through this office. Like, I take really good care of myself, yet I still have these near-death experiences because that's just how ruthless this disease can be. And people don't get that, and it's very painful for me when I'm having a time when I'm really sick due to my T1, and then I scroll on Facebook and see people making fun of my disease and laughing and saying all of these totally untrue, rude things. It's just like, it's such a kick in the pants because it just feels like kicking me when I'm down. Like, why is my almost death and my lower quality of life due to this disease, why is that funny? I really don't get it. And I'm not saying, why is that? Like, I'm not trying to be like facetious or rude when I ask that. I really want to know. I ask that question all the time and nobody will ever answer it for me. But I would love someone to answer that question for me. Why is my pain funny to you? Why? If I had cancer, you wouldn't be making fun of my cancer. You know, like, why are we making fun of this one disease based on overgeneralizations that are not even close to being true? It's not funny. And it needs to stop. It's rude. Like, I can't even watch a sitcom without diabetes jokes in my face. One of my favorite shows, The Office and Parks and Recreation. Like, those are some of my favorite shows. They're hilarious. They're filled with that. They're filled with diabetes jokes. And so all I want to do is lay on the couch and watch my show when I'm feeling like crap, or even when I'm feeling okay and I just want to watch my show. And then I'm having my disease made a mockery. And it just hurts. And it angers me so much, because all that does is further perpetuates these myths and these untrue misconceptions of what this disease is really like. This disease has completely changed me. So I was diagnosed when I was 20. I spent 20 years of my life without it. I know what life is like without it. I know what life is like with a normal body and a working immune system. I know what it feels like to wake up every day and feel good. And I can honestly say that since I've been diagnosed, I haven't felt that way. And I haven't felt the same ever since. There's days I feel better and, like, close to good. But I wake up every day and there's at least something that feels off. And it just is what it is. You learn to live with it. But this disease is keeping us from starting our family. It keeps us from doing a lot of fun things, because you can't always do all the adventures you want to do when you're half a robot and you have all these things attached to your body trying to keep you alive that can't get wet. And, you know, it's a lower quality of life. This disease makes it so that I make plans with friends, and then it gets to the day of and I'm like, I can't go out. I'm sorry. I'm canceling again because I feel like crap and I can't do anything. And, you know, it's frustrating. And then to have that be a joke to people, like, I just don't get it. I don't get why my hardship and my struggle is so funny to you, and why you don't make fun of any other disease. If you're going to make fun of a disease that kills people and ruins lives, why not do it about every disease? You know, why are we doing that to people? Why are we making people feel awful about things that are untrue when they already feel awful enough from the disease itself? And then to have people laughing is just completely tasteless. And I just will never understand. And ever since that first incident I had during my first year of diagnosis, I do feel like it's been part of my mission to shut that stuff down. So now when I see people sharing stuff like that, I'll comment. And I'll say, I think this is completely tasteless. Or, this is super offensive and really rude and really untrue. You know, because when they're putting it out there, I can say something. You're the one putting it out there and saying this stuff, and it's hurting me, and it's mean, and I'm going to tell you about it. And I wouldn't feel so inclined to do it if I felt like I wasn't really making a difference. I wish I could say that I would still do it this full force, even if I wasn't being heard, but that's not true. I want to be heard, and I know that I am being heard. I had an acquaintance from high school contact me, like a few days after I posted that long rant on Facebook about the unicorn frap, and she told me a situation where one of her Facebook friends shared some awful, rude meme about diabetes, in the unicorn frap, and she commented and was like, hey, I just want you to know this is really untrue and it's really offensive to people that are affected by type 1 diabetes who didn't do anything to deserve it, and it's making a mockery of a disease that's really a difficult disease. And she shared my post with him, and he apologized and took it down and was like thanking her for helping him understand. And I just thought that was so cool. The fact that not only she did that, but that he was receptive to it and apologetic and was like, I didn't even think about that or understand that before. And because you spoke up, now I get it. And now I can spread that to other people that are doing it as well. And that just makes it feel worth it to me. And so now anytime, it's sad, y'all, but there's companies that make fun of diabetes. I write in every time. Saturday Night Live does it. I write in every time. I share blog posts from the past that I've written about this issue. And, I mean, I feel that it is my duty to take a stand. Because there's a lot of people in the T1 community that have been diagnosed since they were kids that deal with this all the time. And they're tired. And they're so tired that they won't say anything anymore. Because what's the point? People are still going to keep doing it. And I know people are still going to keep doing it, but I want to speak up for the ones that are tired of speaking up for themselves. I'm not just speaking up for myself here. You know, I'm speaking up for the kids that are constantly embarrassed and affected by this. And sorry, I had to take a sip of my coffee. Apparently, I thought I was losing some steam there. Anyways, I want to take this time to read you a blog post that I wrote in January in regards to the SNL joke about diabetes. I have a few more posts that I'll read later on in this episode, but this is just my most recent one, and it's called, "Hey SNL, I'm not laughing." Here we go. Y'all ready? 4 a.m. Quiet. Calm. Meanwhile, my phone is blowing up. My Dexcom CGM, continuous glucose monitor, alert is screaming. And yet, I can't hear a thing. 4:10 a.m. Hamilton, my dog, howling, snarling, barking. Knock, knock, knock. Tuscaloosa EMS! I hazily begin to get myself out of bed. Whoa, standing is not a good idea. I almost pass out. I finally gain enough strength to see who's at my door and why. Ma'am, we've received a call from our dispatch who communicated with your mother. She said your blood glucose level has been under 35 mg/dL milligrams per deciliter for nearly 2 hours. You're at a high risk of seizing right now and becoming comatose. They come in, test my vitals, and help me correct. As I wait to stabilize, I tell them, I'm good, I got it from here. I just gotta wait till my blood sugar comes back up. They won't leave until I'm stable. Honestly, we're super surprised that you're coherent right now, they say. This ain't my first rodeo, I reply with a half-hearted chuckle. It's been a rough year or so. They make sure I'm stable and they wish me well. If you've known me for a while, or if you've been following my journey for the past year or longer, you'll know that, much to my chagrin, this body of mine is not necessarily the most reliable machine. This time last year, I was in and out of the hospital, fighting DKA, diabetic ketoacidosis. This time last year, I truly wondered if I would even get to see 2017. Because of this disease, I've spent my past 2 birthdays in the hospital, hoping to break that curse this year. Because of this disease, I can't function at the level of normal that I so long for. Because of this disease, I have to sometimes be a hermit, because if I don't listen to my body and put its demands first, it can be fatal. That's very heavy and hard for people to understand, even close family and friends in my closest circle. Being a type 1 diabetic, I'm more susceptible to getting sick easier for longer and worse than someone with a normal immune system. To developing more conditions, no matter how healthily I live, and to landing in the hospital, even for the smallest of things. I developed this disease due to no fault of my own. It simply runs in my family. My body was attacked by a virus in 2011 that awakened this genetic predisposition for T1, shutting down my pancreas. My pancreas fully lost the ability to create insulin on its own. Nothing I do will reignite this ability for my body to produce its own insulin, meaning my insulin must be injected manually. Without insulin, I will die. I did not develop T1 from eating Big Macs, honestly never even had a Big Mac in my life, and I certainly did not develop it from lack of exercise. In fact, at the time I was diagnosed, I worked out twice a day every day, ate nothing but lean meat and veggies, and hydrated constantly. This happened to me. I did not cause this to happen from my own choices and actions. Quite frankly, I'm tired of being the butt of your jokes. I'm usually pretty patient and find most things funny. Laughter is my favorite medicine. However, jokes about diabetes, and any illness for that matter, just cut me to my core. I cannot laugh at them. Despite the fact that I'm well-controlled and work hard at my efforts to do so, I'm still considered brittle. In short, this means that I can do everything perfectly right and still encounter catastrophe regardless. Even diabetics who are not brittle deal with this just the same. My sweet husband has had a doctor look him in the face 4 times over the past 11 months telling him, "I'm sorry, but your wife may not make it through the night because of this disease." I did nothing to contract this disease. The same disease that has tried and continues to try and kill me also makes me the butt of society's cruel, ignorant jokes. The pain and anxiety this disease causes me and my family makes none of these kinds of jokes funny to me. You see, it's not just about me. I don't get to talk to my husband often in this current season of life as he's in the military, but when I do, the first thing he asks is, "How are you feeling? How are your levels? Have you been hospitalized in my absence?" I see his eyes glisten with tears as I try to give the watered-down report of what life is like in this body lately. I hear the panic in my mother's voice as she frantically tries to reach me as my levels drop and drop and drop, or rise and rise and rise. I see the concern on my brother and sister's faces as they internally wonder, "Is this going to happen to me too?" I feel the pity and misunderstanding received from those who want to get it, but can't. This disease has tried to kill me, and it continues to. But make no mistake, I will not let it. Mark my words. Each day is a fight. Each day you ask me how I'm doing, I struggle with how to answer. Each day is a chance for me to prove to this nasty affliction that God has written my story. He is in control. And I know to my core that I will never stop doing my part. I will never stop fighting as long as I live. Each day is dire straits for me. And so, SNL, that is why I'm not laughing at your distasteful diabetes joke. Because not only is it entirely fabricated and horrifically false, but it stings. It stings on behalf of myself, someone who literally fought tooth and nail from slipping into a coma multiple times over the past year. And it stings on behalf of my tribe, those who may not fully understand what this feels like, but who commiserate with me and support me just the same. So I ask you, is it worth it? Is laughing at my pain worth it to you? I would hope the answer is no, but in this day and age, who can be sure? I encourage you to really think about the implications that your jokes have. Picture the faces of those who are impacted and hurt by your joking words, because they're more than just words. They perpetuate a myth that causes me to live in shame. At the end of the day, this disease does not define me. I simply won't let it, because I am more than this. I spend my time and whatever energy I do have shattering expectations. "Oh, you're diabetic. You must be fat and lazy." "Nope, sorry. I'm a multi-half marathoner who enjoys physical fitness." "Oh, you're diabetic. You must only eat crappy foods." "Actually, I don't eat much, and when I do, I prefer food that serves as fuel over junk." I could eat exclusively kale and run 6 hours a day every day for the rest of my life, and I will still have type 1 diabetes, because this disease is not at all impacted by what I eat or how much I work out. I only feel that I have to justify myself to you because you put me in that position when you make my disease a joke. Think. Care. Because it matters. Thank y'all for indulging me there. Sorry it was long. It's somehow longer when you read it out loud than when you read it in your head. Because I felt when I wrote it that it wasn't even that long of a post. But thank you for listening. I really appreciate it. Anytime I write to a company or a show or an organization about this, I try not to even mention the joke because I know that my post has the potential to be shared, and I don't even want to, like, glorify their joke by giving it attention in that way. So that's why I didn't really mention it. But the joke on SNL was something about eating Big Macs makes you have diabetes. I don't even remember. And see, like, whenever I talk about this, it makes me feel like I'm being whiny. And I don't want to appear that way. Because when you have a chronic disease, you have to be tough as nails. You have to be emotionally strong. And I do think that I am most of the time. But it's also frustrating being made a mockery. And I have a choice. I can either sit around and be upset about it, or I can be upset about it and then do something to create change. It's never going to change if people don't understand that it's an issue. If people don't know that they're being hurtful, they're just going to keep doing it. So I feel like it's part of my job to bring attention to it and to educate. Because I was so uneducated about T1 before I had it. I had to educate myself through Google and talking to other T1s about the misconceptions and about how T1 just functions in general. I didn't know enough. Because I never had a reason to know, really. Not in depth, at least. And if someone would have taken the time to teach me about it, even if I had no reason to know anything, I would have listened. And honestly, that's the best thing that you can do, is just listen. And sometimes when I bring this stuff up, people will be like, well, at least you don't have cancer. And I hate that. Can we please not equate other diseases? Can we please not compare other diseases and try to say one is worse than the other? You can argue that point from multiple sides, which I'm not going to do because I think it's super insensitive. And I don't want to make anyone upset. Because I know what it's like to have your disease be talked about and put on display and made fun of. And I don't want to do that to other people. But you could do that with any disease. And, you know, just because I look functional, just because I wake up every day and go to work, doesn't mean that I feel like I'm dying on the inside. I just have to get up and do it anyways. That's what it's like when you have a chronic disease. You get up, you feel awful, and you just push through anyways. And a lot of people see you from the outside and think, oh, she can't be that sick. Like, she has makeup on and she's talking to people and doing her job. And it's like, yeah, but on the inside, I feel like I'm dying. Or like, you have no idea that once I get home, I'm going to collapse and be there for the rest of the night because this takes all of the energy that I have and I already don't have much. My goal in talking about all this and recording this today is just to give context, just to help outsiders understand what it feels like when you already are down and you're already feeling badly because of something you can't control, and then to look around and see that society's making a joke out of all of it and laughing at your pain. It's just not okay. And I think that the only way that we're going to change that is if we start becoming vocal about it. And if people just care enough to sit down and listen. And that's what y'all are doing today. And that means so much more than you even know. To sit here and listen to my side of things. And to begin to try and empathize. And to listen to my dog in the background being really loud. Hamilton, my dog, he's a diabetic alert dog in training. We've been working a lot lately on his scent training and the way that he alerts, and he's doing really well. So soon we'll do an episode kind of talking about that journey with him. I feel like there's not too much to talk about, but I've had a lot of people ask about him and how we do things, so I'll definitely be answering those questions. Sorry, he's being so loud. My son, he's just crazy. Y'all, I love this dog so much. You have no idea. Even when he's ruining my podcast audio. Also, I've had a lot of y'all writing some questions for me, and I'm wanting to do a Q&A episode. So I'm going to put that off a little while to give y'all a chance to send in even more questions. So if you think of something that you want to ask me, it can be about T1, it could not be about T1, it could be silly, it could be deep, whatever you're thinking. Email me at smith.audra.m as in Meredith, and I'll get your questions answered. This has been a really cool opportunity for me to have a voice. Honestly, that's the only way that I can take something. Hi, honey. Hannah's saying hello. Say hi to the people, buddy. He's like, I can't talk. This is how I can turn something awful into something productive. This is a productive way that I can handle the emotional pain that I have because of this disease. And so thank you for just indulging me by listening and by caring, and especially for those of y'all that actually are helping redirect people's understanding of diabetes in general. It means so much. And I think that we really can begin to change the language and the discussion and turn this embarrassment and shame from this disease into something productive and show the real side of diabetes. Show what it's really like. Because if people knew what this is really like, what this really feels like, how it affects families, they would realize that it's not a laughing matter at all. And that's what I want. I want people to realize that it's not funny. And people aren't going to realize that until I'm honest. And so I'm sorry if it seems like I'm being whiny or too sensitive. But this is the honest truth. You know, maybe this wouldn't make me so upset if my journey with T1 was a little bit easier. But y'all, literally last year, I felt it all ending. I felt my body shutting down. I felt my heart rate change. My breathing became difficult and labored. I felt my body wanting to just turn off and relax and go into a coma, but I fought tooth and nail with every ounce of strength that I had from the Lord to pull myself out of there. And every day I fight, and I will continue to fight, whether it's literally fighting this disease, fighting the misconceptions around it. I'll never stop fighting. But I can't do it alone. I need to have people behind me that understand and that at least listen and care. And you guys are awesome for listening to me today. If you have any questions for me, please write in, and Hamilton and I will get them answered. He's my sidekick. And always remember, I wear my heart on my sleeve and my pancreas on my hip.